Welcome back for episode 321. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, all things considered. I'm not in Gaza,
Yeah.
nor am any in any of the several college campuses that are experiencing protests, anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic, I'm understand. Apparently, if you're protesting Israeli policies or U.S. policy regarding Israel, you are labeled an anti-Semite and you're liable to be blacklisted or have your college lose funding from several of the Jewish billionaires that endow these universities. They're so generous with their money. But it is this conflict in Gaza is ongoing. There's yet to be a full-scale invasion. We hear reports of incursions and a lot of bombing, a lot of killing. Thousands are dead now, from what I understand. Some say as many as 9,000. Have been killed. Many of those, are, of course, are children. This is, of course, affecting public opinion on this. The administration is sort of backing off a little bit from its unconditional support for Israel. Anthony Blinken now is going to the area, not meeting directly with Netanyahu and talking about the importance of a ceasefire and negotiations, as opposed to last week when it was all about unconditional support for Israel. At home, this is creating a well, I guess in the West, but particularly here in the United States, it's creating a sort of a very interesting political dynamic or situation where the left, particularly people of color of the left, who immediately identified with the plight of the Palestinians, are now apparently being targeted for blacklisting, being canceled, because they have the audacity to protest on behalf of the Palestinians. And protesting the violent or savage Israeli response to the October 7th attacks, the carpet bombing of Gaza, indiscriminate in many ways, which I think is part of a strategy, is part of a depopulation, I think, ethnic cleansing operation under the cover of war of self-defense. That's an old trick that goes way back to 1947, 48, really, Daria Sin, and that's how Israel was created, really, just ethnic cleansing. But we have this situation. A particular case that illustrates this is a Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman from Michigan. She's being accused of being an anti-Semite. She has come out and defended a controversial phrase being used by many anti-Israeli protesters across the country. I think it's from the river to the sea. And some say it's a call to eradicate Israel. Well, in many respects, I can see what it means, is because Israel's Zionism is a call to eradicate the Palestinians. So when you have a turf battle, yes, that's you can interpret, you can infer that, I suppose. From the river to the sea, she defended this saying, from the river to the sea is an aspirational call for freedom, human rights, and peaceful coexistence, not death, destruction, or hate. My work in advocacy is always centered in justice and dignity for all people, no matter faith or ethnicity. The fallout squad member wrote in a post on X following a video she posted early in the day that included the phrase. The ADL, an advocacy group, that's an interesting description, that combats anti-Semitism, also creates anti-Semitism as part of its marketing strategy, ripped Tlaib for a previous use of the phrase in 2020. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. A code for eradicating the state of Israel and its millions of Jews. Reminder, this is a sitting congresswoman, the group wrote on X, then referred to as Twitter. Of course, she, I think, represents Michigan, Dearborn, Michigan, if I'm not mistaken, or that roughly that area. Additionally, because the reason why Rashida Tlaib is a sitting congresswoman, is largely because of Jewish. Backed or Jewish promoted immigration policies, Jewish promoted critical race theory, Jewish promoted sort of agitation of people of color, but those people are kept on a short leash. They're used to go after whites, really, and Rashida Tlaib does that. But now she's finding out now there's a hierarchy here, that if you're a BIPOC, a Black, Indigenous, or person of color, as I think what it stands for, you're only allowed to criticize white Christians or, Heritage America, conservatives, whites. If you in any way start to step on the toes of Jews, you find yourself in a lot of hot water, which she is now politically. I think there was actually, was there was the congresswoman from Georgia wanted to censor her for her marks. That's how, you know, the right responds to these things. So basically, if you criticize Israel, if you question, you know, the genocide that's occurring in Gaza, you're an anti-Semite. Of course, she represents a lot of Muslims. So she's going to take this position of, you know, so this is a kind of a problem that the Democratic Party has, that that the left has now. Largely a result of the non-white immigration policies promoted by Jews. The promotion of diversity is our strength. The sort of the rainbow nation that they want to have to undermine the white supermajority to change the nation's politics. This is, I think, an inevitable result of the very policy that Jews have been promoting. But I do think that there's something they're willing to accept. Sort of they'd rather deal with sort of a rabble or a babble of discontented colored people than dealing with sort of the white supermajority, the heritage of America that wants to find America, because they find the other, the former, to be much more manageable and easy to manipulate, whereas the white supermajority will have enough agency and consciousness to perhaps check or challenge the organized Jewish community's agenda. But on the other hand, the white supermajority is much easily guilt-tripped and manipulated emotionally to use their values against them, which the Jews have successfully done in the 20th century. Whereas colored people, yellow people, if you will, non-whites, if you will, don't have the same pathological guilt. They're not easily manipulated, and they're easily agitated, and they have been agitated. They've been told that they have a right to speak. They have power. They must speak truth to power. They must have racial identity, identity politics, these things. But again, this only goes so far if it gets in the way of the Jewish agenda. Would you agree with that analysis?
Yeah, it's hard to dispute. The current situation is, I mean, just if you stand back and look at it, what's kind of the most interesting thing is that it shows how irrational the George Floyd protests were. Because, in the following sense, that they were completely race-based, right? There wasn't like Floyd's death had some kind of basis, in a moral situation. In fact, I mean, if you've seen Dave Schmidt, the Notre Dame biologist who did the analysis of Floyd's passing away, and he's done a lot of sort of work on the biology there and shows that, you know, this really wasn't brought about so much by the policeman, but rather by the fact that Floyd had fentanyl and methadrine in his system and he was in poor health. And so why was the protest so vivid? Why was it so, you know, widespread? Well, it was because the media was able to stir up the racial aspect, right? That's really what it was. If it had been a white person or if it was a black cop, perhaps, you wouldn't have had the kind of protests that we did. So here you've got basically the same group, I would say. I think that's a good general statement, is protesting now against the Gaza genocide. And it isn't because they have an understanding of the situation, right? Again, it's really because they don't have an understanding of the situation that the specific way they're protesting is occurring. My point here is that Hamas is a creation of Israel. Hamas has a foreign policy which is destructive, obviously, to the Gaza people, right? I mean, the idea of like a military invasion where your targets are, you know, children and a bunch of rave dancers on LSD, I mean, this is just ludicrous. It's as ludicrous as the claim that the Israelis didn't see the attack both coming and then occurring, and that they couldn't have stopped it, you know, with just, you know, like a few soldiers with machine guns, which they stood down. So the whole thing is just a way of taking advantage of the stupidity. And I hate to say it, but I don't know what other word to use here, that was exactly in place during the George Floyd demonstration. So what your point is just really very good and clear, is that You have a group in the United States, which is a combination of African Americans who are sort of heritage, right? In many cases, they're totally heritage. They've been here since the beginning of the country. Their ancestors were. But they are mixed with recent immigrants. And as a group, they are completely irrational. The heritage African Americans, I think, have a very weak understanding of the forces that destroyed their community, beginning with the Great Society programs, right? I don't think this is well understood. And the dark-skinned immigrants who've been shoved into America, they are just completely irrational. They've been given kind of racial fairy tales about, you know, heritage America and white people. And so they don't have a good understanding of really what is bringing them there, certainly, and of the world itself.
Well, they certainly don't feel grateful of an accepting nation. They feel actually they come here agitated, expecting, you know, all types of benefits and
supersession. They're here to take over, and they feel they're justified in it because of racism. But here, the hopefully, which of course it's probably far fetched, but the hope is that the George Floyd Hamas protest team, you know, to use an expression, will realize that there is something contradictory in the way the media is treating them, right? That there's just something obvious that they need to understand, which is different when they protest against Jewish behavior than when they protest against, you know, heritage white racism. Because if they don't understand it, if they don't understand the difference, then they're really not going to be, you know, engaging in activity that is in their interest. They will be used as puppets, and they will eventually be, their protests and their worldview will be turned against them, right? So this is because they'll be so easy to manipulate. As you pointed out, the clump that we now have, this combination of heritage African Americans who have been misled and also destroyed culturally through the Great Society attack and all of the other things that basically Judeo-Masonic political influence has brought against them, right? In combination with the immigrants who are being force-fed into America, I mean, this is a completely irrational clump. It's going to be, it's used for malevolent purposes in almost every single way. And it is going to be, it will always be sort of like suffering and never making any actual progress toward a better world because of the kind of the force-fed irrationality and the way they're being emotionally manipulated. So all I can say is, Tim, is that I just hope that there is a lesson here that's obvious and they'll understand it, you know, that the Palestinians are not regarded as real human beings by the people who control the media and the political system in the United States.
Yeah, it is interesting that the only time that Republicans have the courage to criticize a woman of color is when she's been caught criticizing Jews.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that's the only time they'll criticize her, you know. Or question her, you know, like her. I mean, they can criticize on certain political issues, but as far as her legitimacy, like her, you know, the fact she's in Congress at all. But no one's even addressing sort of the immigration policies since the 1960s that have led to the declining white majority, ethnic white majority, and the introduction of these non-Western people into the United States. That question are whether or not they're compatible is a question. Because you know they have an outlook and belief that are different, that are non-Western, and when you have an outlook and belief that are non-Western, perhaps you shouldn't live in a Western country. I'm just saying, but they've been introduced to the country on purpose to create the very instability and problems that we're experiencing now. But this type of blowback is at least from day to day, it's fun to watch at least. So
yeah, it is fun to watch, and the thing is in a cynical and kind of way, but. You know, the fact is, all that it really is a higher level of animation of the cultural morass and cesspool that America is at this point, and Europe as well. I mean,
yes.
the immigration policies coupled with kind of oligarchic banking systems have made the heritage groups very impotent. They were the groups that were really kind of creating sort of a culture you wanted to live in, right? Well, the less that they have influence, the worse the place becomes. So
Yes.
now when you go, I mean, this is just obvious, self-evident, right? You drive into the cities and you can see what the results of all of the immigration and welfare policies, that have been implemented, as really as a tax. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. They were all designed to destroy kind of European culture. Well, they've worked. Now you can drive through San Francisco and you can see it. You can drive through Portland, LA, any of these places. You can see the results that this wasn't some kind of political, process gone wrong. It wasn't bad ideas. These were ideas that were designed to bring this about. So now you've got our situation at the moment. And the only silver lining in all this, Tim, is that the woke crowd, particularly I really would hope, but both the heritage African-Americans and the recent immigrants who are, some of them are actually very interested in sort of the intellectual world, that those two groups can like compare notes and actually create some clear political positions that can then be given and spread throughout their respective communities. Because the situation in Gaza, no matter how you try to dress it up, it's simply genocide, right? This isn't a war between equals. This is just population reduction. I mean, if you look at the stats in terms of death, how many Israelis have died in the war so far? I think it's like 5, right? How many Palestinians have died? 10,000?
Mm-hmm.
So is this actually a war? I mean, it sure seems more like population reduction. So the Israeli, and then of course, again, you have to look at the current situation in Gaza in the overall context, right? You go from like the ownership of the region of Palestine by Palestinians in like 1920, which is like 99%, to today, you've had a very clear pattern. It is so this, what you're seeing today, is just another iteration of 10,000 events, of 10,000 little acts of,
yes, pressure. Pretty much modern terrorism. The cycle of violence here about was introduced
to acquire land and to depopulate and to move out. And then, of course,
it was started by Jewish terrorist organizations.
Well, they were
brought Lehi in. And Irgun and all that. Yeah.
But Irgun and these guys were actually, I can show you like letters and policy papers going back to 1910, mm-hmm. letters that the Zionists are exchanging, which are absolutely, basically supersession of the Palestinians. They're saying, we got to come out. We're going to have an Israeli state. We don't want any Palestinians in it. And it doesn't really matter what we have to do in terms of violence but they are accepting that there will be violence.
And even against Jews, because they had Jews,
of course.
Yeah, they carried out massacres in Iraq to chase them into Palestine. Zionists did.
World War II, I would say.
World War II.
A broad stroke attempt at like pushing Jews in down into Israel to immigrate them. But that's a different subject. But the point is that, you mentioned like from basically from like, I think you said from 1940 on, but we have to remember this goes back to Palmerston. This goes back to 1840 when he was talking about now's the time we're going to the Jews have to go back to the Holy Land. So this has been a Masonic project specific to reestablishing what they want in the region. And the people who live there have no rights, no humanity relative to the position of the Masonic families, the Churchills, the Cecils, the Palmersons. These are all, in my opinion, all converso families are holding this strange and weird ideas about, World War. I mean, about the first century and Christianity. So they feel that they are just kind of predestined by God to recreate Israel, and they don't care about anyone else. So this is, and you see, this is their position. And the only way they can bring it about is by lying, right? They have to lie. They can't just say, well, we're going to do this, what we're going to do. So they lie about everything. I mean, if murder is okay, lying is not even a problem. So here we are, Tim. They've got the people in Gaza. And you have all of the, you know, Sturm und Drang about the current situation, about the babies being beheaded and all this stuff. Look, this is just another aspect of this process that has been going on for over 100 years. That's what you're looking at. And the people who are executing it have to be exposed for what they are, because they cannot stand any sunlight. And if the heritage African Americans who you know should be interested in the plight of the Palestinians and as swarthy people can get clear on what is occurring and share that information with the recent immigrants, then they can actually create, you know, then you won't have like stupid George Floyd protests, which just shatter the region that or the areas that they need to have an economy exist for them to have any, you know, real human success. Instead, they can start organizing against the people and the causes that are destroying the people in Gaza and also are wrecking their lives here in the United States.
There's a lot of discussion about Dresden in the news, the German city that was firebombed in 1945, February 1945. An Israeli official proudly compared the bombardment of Gaza Strip to the Allied firebombing of Dresden. The Associated Press then quietly removed the section, noting U.S. alarm over the historical comparison. So the Associated Press is editing their own news reports. Associated Press has quietly deleted the reference to the official Israeli threats to subject Gaza Strip to a Dresden-style firebombing campaign. The latest move in legacy media outlets' ongoing push to downplay the impact of Tel Aviv's siege over the 2 million Palestinians in Gaza. 4 years officials familiar with the discussion said American diplomats became increasingly alarmed by comments from their Israeli counterparts regarding their intention to deny water, food, medicine, electricity, and fuel into Gaza, as well as the inevitability of civilian casualties, the AP article previously stated. Members of the Israeli security and political establishment told the U.S. diplomats that the eradication of Hamas would require methods used in the defeat of the Axis powers in World War II. The AP originally wrote, adding that the Israeli officials have publicly made similar comparisons. The offending passages have since been deleted without explanation, a textbook violation of journalistic ethics. The decision is all the more baffling given that the Israeli officials have made no secret of their desire to treat the Palestinian civilians the same way the Western allies treated the Germans at the end of World War II. In an October 16th interview, an Israeli ambassador to the UK, Zippy Hotovelli, shrugged off concerns about the thousands of innocents killed in IDF strikes on Gaza, suggesting that because Allied powers killed tens of thousands of German civilians with relentless airstrikes in the 1940s, Israel is entitled to do the same. There are many, many civilians that got attacked from your attacks on German cities, she told the Sky News anchor. Dresden was a symbol, but you have attacked Hamburg, you attacked other cities, and altogether it was over 600,000 civilians killed. There are over 600,000 civilian Germans that got killed. Comparing the military-occupied Palestinian population to Nazis, Hotovelli continued, was it worth it in order to defeat Nazi Germany? And the answer is yes. So we have Dresden. Of course, we have this, again, she's not the only one. Again, a lot of these Jews are referring to Dresden as an example to mete out, I guess, righteous justice on the, insubordinate Palestinians.
My Amalek.
Yeah. You have Benjamin Netanyahu referring to Amalek. I think that's, is that Samuel in the Bible?
Yeah.
So that's where you just wipe out not only the, all your enemies, but even their pets, right? Even their livestock, just eradicate them. This is kind of difficult because, again, this is the, if you look at the polling data, 66% of Americans support a ceasefire, but I think no senator supports a ceasefire, and only a handful of Congress people in the House of Representatives support a ceasefire. But as I pointed out, 100% of the top 10 donors who are Jewish to both parties, Republican Democrats, support the Israelis. So that's, but anyway, this reference to Dresden is telling, because again, it just shows sort of the savage ruthless attitude of the Israelis and the Jews to support the Israelis. It was a time when Dresden really wasn't talked about. It was kind of hush hush. They were kind of ashamed about it because they didn't want to expose the extent of the, I guess, the nature of the war crimes that the Allies perpetrated to defeat the Germans in World War II. Of course, that wasn't necessary to defeat Germany in World War II. The Strategic Bombing Survey of 1946 admitted as much that the bombing campaign against the Japanese and the Germans actually took away from the war effort, because not only because of the vast resources that it took to muster these 800, 700 plane sorties, but it took away from the other aspects of the war effort, particularly on the ground. But it also stiffened resistance and made conquering these countries more difficult. It actually vindicated much of the Third Reich's propaganda regarding the Allies. So and also, it just simply wasn't morally justifiable. It's they called it terror bombing, dehousing, terror bombing. The British started it because they saw it as the only way to fight back early in the war. But by 1943, it simply wasn't necessary to wage this type of war. It actually made it more difficult. There are other more effective means. If defeating Germany was the primary objective, targeting key infrastructure, railroads, fuel refinement centers, these things. I think by the spring of 1945, 98% of German fuel production had been destroyed. That really meant that there was no more any mechanized resistance to the Allied advance, both east and west. And so simply, it was just pure savagery and Talmudic vengeance, as I think as Patton called it. But again, this reference to Dresden, it's kind of embarrassing because, I mean, look what they did to Dresden. Look what happened in Dresden. I mean, they firebombed the city. I mean,
I'm so glad that the Israeli politician made what is an absolutely obvious, description of what's going on in Gaza. It is like Dresden. And what Dresden was depopulation. There was no military purpose. It was the hatred of the German people. And therefore, you could carry out Churchill's dream of exterminating the German race, right? Okay, so and it wasn't Dresden and Hamburg. There were hundreds of cities that
yes,
were firebombed.
Cologne,
Yeah, so
mid-sized
no,
cities, yeah.
hundreds, hundreds. There were hundreds. So they've kept it hidden, but believe me, they were depopulating the 80 million Germans with this approach. Okay, so. Now, I wanted to digress just for a second and point out that why was the final solution put into effect? Now, what is the final solution? You read the documents, the Wannsee Protocol and the Mueller's memo that explains what was going on. It was evacuation. There was two. First, you had the emigration. Remember, Hitler is the biggest Zionist in history, shoving all the Jews down into Israel. Then you have the evacuation. Now, this is how it's described. They're moving him to the east. This is why all of the so-called big, death camps are not in Germany for some reason. They've got them in Poland and in, Czechoslovakia, all these places. The claim is, which of course is not correct, but this is what they claim. So why did they do this? Well, Tim, they did this to protect the Jews. You see, this is really what's going on. I know that people will find this as kind of shocking or far-fetched or unsupported, but believe me, it is the case, in my opinion, that the whole reason that you had the evacuation was to set up the firebombing. So the places that the Jews were sent were places that were not going to be firebombed. They were places that they could then, keep them and emigrate them to Israel or back into Europe following the conclusion of the war. But in the meantime, they had cleaned the area of Jews so that they could get down to the business of firebombing the
So,
German.
ironically, Hamburg and Dresden were Holocausts, literal.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, when the Israeli politician, goes there and mentions that, well, we have the right to basically kill civilians because we're dealing with evil, right? Even though evil is, a little bit ambivalent, a little bit nuanced, because, there has been this genocide of the Palestinian people that's gone on for over 100 years, And of course, because the Israelis set up Hamas, and of course, all of the inexplicable activity that had to take place for these, you know, the claimed, you know, events of October the 7th to have occurred. So even though it's so nuanced, nevertheless, they take the position, no, no, it's pure, unadulterated evil. Therefore, we can just kill all the civilians. Well, isn't this funny, Tim? Isn't this odd how they've got to the exact same moral position here in terms of the propaganda that they always do, seemingly, before they genocide, right? Mm-hmm. And so here we are once again. We're in a context that if you don't understand it, it is hard to have any reaction to it that's coherent, that'll be effective. What people I would love to see, you know, like the people who are supporting the Palestinians follow up on one of the Hamas administrators, you know, executives, who made a statement last week that I thought was very telling. He goes, you know, we don't understand what happened on October the 7th. It's kind of, we would like to have an international tribunal set up to investigate this. I think that there is probably a need to know bifurcation in the Hamas executive committees where below a certain point, you know, the people just don't know really what's going on. I think at the executive level, you know, the Hamas leaders who are in league with the Israelis, they knew perfectly well what was going to be the end result of all this. And they knew that such a foreign policy, such an invasion, was exactly opposite the interests of the Palestinian people, right? Because it created the propaganda moment that the Israelis can now claim is the unadulterated evil. Forget about any analysis or, you know, like mercy. We're just going to genocide. That's all we're going to do. We are.
Do you think that's been squandered at this point? Because the longer you stretch this out, the people are going to forget, you know, some of the claims of October 7th and just see the everyday bombing. And
that's why, Tim, I mean, my opinion is you're dealing with incrementalism here. They're not going to kill 100% of the Palestinian people. They're going to set up.
I think they're going to clear them out. They're going to set them on. I mean, you had that report come out last week from the Israeli Intelligence Bureau, the plan, and this is just an idea, but it's being implemented as we speak, is you make life so miserable in Gaza and you create a war zone there. So you send them closer to, you know, to Egypt. Yeah, then you disperse them through the various NGOs in the ensuing years. Because years from now, these people will be sent to Minnesota, to Canada, to Europe.
They're going to compress the Gaza Strip south. Yeah. It's going to be compressed up again. And there'll be Israeli occupation of the top half or top 70%. The Palestinians will be squished down in a little tiny area where the Israelis will control the airspace, the water, the food. They will make them miserable in every way possible. And then they will create immigration opportunities for them to get out to Minnesota.
Well, it's Moshe Dayan who said the choice that the Palestinians have is to stay here and live like dogs or to leave.
Yeah. And then again, they will work on the West Bank, which is already under complete Israeli control. They
can. By the way, in the Middle East, no one treats dogs nicely.
No.
It's only in the West with dogs.
Yeah. No, they're not going to be pets that are loved. Right? Yeah.
If you're outside the Occident, particularly outside North America, and they say treated like dogs, people think, no, because Americans like dogs. It's other cultures hate them.
Well, really, it's not that complicated. I mean, what you have is the setting up of a racial Jewish state.
Yes.
And in order to achieve it, that you have to use a lot of sophistry and propaganda to justify the violence and the evil that you need to do to push out.
It is an interesting strategy. I mentioned this before we started recording, is this Jewish strategy, the Israeli strategy, through the various agencies, both in Israel and in the West, you know, like Israeli Immigrant Aid Society and Israel Aid, and even supposedly non-Jewish organizations that are infiltrated and controlled by Jews, because Jews control the funding, like Catholic Charities, will facilitate the transportation of these, of people from, you know, the Middle East, North Africa, Muslims, if you will, to Western countries, and that we've seen recently because of the NATO wars in North America and the Middle East, and the ensuing refugee crisis, they storm Europe and North America. They find their ways from Mexico into into the United States via whatever. They have cell phones that are paid for. Who pays for these cell phones? And they have programs set up within the United States government, like $2,000 a month welfare for immigrants and these things. So that these governments and these various NGOs are well funded and being mobilized to bring these country, bring these foreigners into the Western countries. This is going to set up a dynamic or situation in those countries where these people, a lot of the native population, will be treated a lot of bad behavior, which then creates a lot of acrimony and also dislike for these groups. So it's much easier, particularly if you're like in the right wing in America, to accept the idea of white Israelis bombing brown people in Palestine because brown people in Dearborn, Michigan are behaving poorly. It's,
right.
It's same thing in Europe. You know, they're raping our women and these things. Well, yeah, why are young men of a military age, fighting age, being sent to your country? Who's doing that? Because the Israelis want to get those people out of that area into Europe to create trouble, which makes their job easier of genociding Palestinians and other, Arabs.
Well, it's a
they want to control.
And also, wherever they get sent, the political kind of coherency will be diminished.
Yes.
Right. When you put in immigrants who have kind of incorrect ideas about history and about why they're being brought into the country, how are you going to create a kind of like Jeffersonian democracy?
No, because you'll have a Muslim mayor of London,
yeah,
or a Hindu prime minister of Great Britain, or Muslims aspiring to be the governing class in Scotland, lecturing the native white population that their nation is too white.
Sure.
Scotland is full of Scots. There's too many white people and too many Irish white people in Ireland. We have Ireland has a gay Indian prime minister, half Indian, lecturing the Irish how there's too many Irishmen in education and law in Ireland. And that's the situation that the Jews want, that they create.
Of course. I mean, the thing is, and then the whites are bamboozled by, by critical theory and the Frankfurt School ideas, the authoritarian personality. And I was having a discussion argument with, podcast of, about critical theory. And I was going, look, this is really where the ideas are coming from, that sort of like white college age and white liberals in general present. I mean, these ideas are so self-destructive to the interests of these individuals. You have to wonder, well, where do they come from? Where does woke consciousness even come from? It's so destructive to just the biology of any kind of ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at critical theory, you see, well, what is this? It's a combination of Marxism and Freudianism, right? I mean, mm-hmm. this is even how, as they describe it. Well, just ask yourself, have there ever been two more stupid philosophies and obvious, racial attacks than Marxism and Freudianism?
Well, and also they only aimed at white Christian.
Well, of course, and they are complete failures every time that as individual intellectual ideas. I mean, Freudianism at this point is just regarded as,
well, if ethnocentrism is wrong, how do they? Then the Jews must be wrong because they're very
ethnocentric. Well, that would be now you're moving in down the trajectory. we hope that honest, heritage African Americans and clear-minded immigrants will start to realize, wait a second, this is all adding up to one idea, to one explanatory premise, So
but the destruction of the white Christian European civilization, the
and
West.
The supersession, this is supersession. They are implementing a kind of Judeo-Masonic, political power that will dominate. And you can see now, right, that we have to resist it with our very fiber because it is not trying to implement a workers' paradise. It is genocidal. It is beyond racist in its like, look how it's dealing with the Palestinians, right? Look at the Israeli political individual who was saying, Dresden, there's our rationale, there's our justification. They hurt Israeli people, so our response has no proportionality whatsoever. It is 100% just wipe them all out.
Then how do they turn out and criticize Hamas for kidnapping, you know, so-called civilians are really,
I mean, of course, I mean, it's just, it makes no sense at all. It's just an honest intellectual debate, but it makes perfect sense if you are a racist clump of individuals who are determined to basically dominate regions and genocide all the other ethnicities in the area. I mean,
Well, the irony is that they'll talk, make claims about white supremacy and white nationalism and racism and evil white people. White people must be erased from the face of the earth by any means necessary. I think Noel Inechtiev said, "What? What?" And
Thank you.
he never was fired. And I said, "Well, wait a second. So what you're saying is that they have to like label everything, any expression of white identities, you know, culture." These things as white supremacy, because that's how they established Jewish supremacy.
And the other group that I would love to see become more animated, more aggressive, and more sort of trying to gain access to the media are the righteous Jews. Because if you notice, there's a tremendous response by the Jewish people who didn't get the memo from the Masons, about what is really going on here. They didn't see that this is genocide. They have a moral reaction to all of this. So you can see that there are kind of components that can be arranged, to create some political power. You have the righteous Jews. You have the clear-minded intellectuals, who are like heritage African Americans, and then recent immigrants to the United States and Europe. I think that group is kind of a long way from having, like a clear-minded sort of history of the world that they can use, but there are certainly at least, some of them that can be, shown the truth and then can start behaving in the right direction. I mean, look, these people can then be unified with like a heritage American, independent media, anti-vax types, and we can start exchanging information in a political way to try to support one another against what really, at this point, it looks like a worldwide genocide that's going on, right? I mean, isn't that really what's occurring here? You're going to end up at the end of this process with just a tiny amount of people and everyone else dead. I mean, that just seems like what's going on at this point. So, the events of the last 3 weeks are, they're horrible. They're just horrible to watch. But
Well,
let's
I'm
just.
trying to, it's obvious to ask, aside all that, if you approach someone, is the real estate in the Middle East, is the real estate in Israel worth risking a global conflagration? Well, obviously, it's not. So why are we doing it? It's
Yeah,
irrational, you know.
I mean,
But so again, how do you explain these things? It's a whether, you know, but then again, it wasn't irrational. It wasn't rational to wage World War One. Right, the Great War over
of course,
an
World War II.
assassination, but these things occur, and
Depopulation means. I mean, the situation we have now is, we were talking about the, what is the large sort of political structures that are being given to the public to explain, our current situation in the world, and you have China, Iran, and Russia now kind of exchanging technology, obviously. I
yeah,
mean,
this
last.
is yeah, the Belt and Road Initiative and these things, yeah.
Well, also the military technology that's being exchanged. I mean, last I think in the last couple of days, the 50 cruise missiles were sent into Ukraine. I mean, these are Shahad drones. These are it's Iranian technology.
Yeah, they're very good with the drone technology, yeah.
Yeah, and then well, and then you have there certainly is the exchange between Russia and China in terms of other military technologies. So, okay, they are supporting Hamas, or at least indicating that they're opposed to the genocide of these people. They've all made public statements. You're absolutely right. You're having the potential for a regional war, right? Because if I mean, how can Iran, if they are brought into this mess, would they use their technology against the
Well, if the
Israelis?
United States were sovereign, it would tell Israel to behave, right? But that's the tail is obviously wagging the dog here. And you can get into how that occurred, meaning it makes no sense for the United States to to provoke or foment another war, to finance another war in a very sensitive strategic area like the Persian Gulf. Energy, with the global economy is fractured and is fragile the way it is, given recent past recent years.
Right. I mean,
nevertheless, another war is brewing, and no one's saying, "Wait, this is insane." Like same thing would happen in Ukraine. Yeah. There's something else going on here. Meaning, it is. This week we thought we'd talk about this idea, at least theory, where one of these, I guess you could say, meta-historical analysis or idea. It's called the Thucydides trap. It was a term that was popularized by Graham T. Allison, a political scientist, to describe the tendency towards war when an emerging power threatens to displace an existing great power as a regional international hegemon. The term exploded in popularity after 2015 and primarily applies, I think, to the analysis between the United States and, of course, the People's Republic of China. The concept stems from a suggestion that going back to antiquity, Peloponnesian Wars and the battle between Athens and Sparta, when Sparta resisted Athens' attempt to dominate or continue dominance. And of course, led to the Peloponnesian War, and eventually led, I think, to that area being conquered by Philip of Macedon and then his son, Alexander the Great. It's one of these ideas, I think, has some explanatory power. It's not so much incorrect as is insufficient. We do see examples of it being played out in history, obviously with the Peloponnesian Wars. It's been applied to certain geopolitical wrangling, because we see with the West, the economic situation in the West and the rise of the East and Russia, the BRIC countries, the Belt and Road Initiative, the so-called New Silk Road, meaning the idea that China and Russia and perhaps other countries would get together. And more importantly, they trade with Europe, and that would marginalize the United States, the so-called sea powers or the Atlanticist powers. And so this might explain why NATO and the United States have moved in such a hostile, aggressive stance towards Russia in recent years, because this speaks to the Mackinder thesis, the idea that the sea power must control the land power, and it does. It keeps the control of the world, this meaning that the Eurasia being the pivot of world control. This was the Mackinder thesis, by keeping it constantly divided through warfare, internecine battles, and these things. We saw that in World War I and World War II and in the Cold War. NATO was there to keep Germany down and Russia out. In World War I and World War II, we got Germany to fight Russia to kind of destroy each other's as powers, or at least to the extent they become an economic competitor to the Atlanticist powers. And with World War I, although we hear stories about, Archduke Ferdinand being assassinated, and the alliance system, the war by timetables, there's sort of this inevitable process kicked in when, after the assassination, a war just started and war took control. But really behind that was Great Britain's anxiety regarding Germany's economic development, and particularly if it did form an economic union with then burgeoning Russia, and also trade with the East, the Berlin to Baghdad Railroad. It's very similar to the certain concerns over the pipelines, and also Belt and Road initiatives and trade pacts or trade condominiums that are outside the Western or Atlanticist economic control system, which is the petrodollar and debt. And so this is why we're seeing these conflicts occurring. The pretext is always human rights or some sort of local dispute, like a border dispute with Ukraine and Russia. And this is why the NATO and the America fomented this war in 2022 between Russia and Ukraine. Of course, this speaks to 2014 when there was a coup there, when we actually overthrew the pro-Russian government. But then there was an 8-year, I guess you could say, a period where Russia was being provoked. The pro-Western government in Ukraine was installed. But this is, again, this is also in the context of constant NATO expansion. Same thing with the current problems in Gaza. Again, it has some explanatory power, but it seems to me it's some of these broad meta historical analysis. It's again not so much incorrect as insufficient. It also is a way of having people avoid accountability for the decisions they're taking. Meaning, if it, these are broad historical forces and no one's individually responsible, then there's no one really to be held responsible for the catastrophes that have befallen humanity in the past century. And so, and it's also a cover-up because I think if we drill into the current disputes, it's not so much a broad civilizational conflict as it is a certain particular interest groups that are manipulating the situation to pursue their very narrow interests. And we can get into that. So, this is the Thucydides trap. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it was a perfectly coherent theory, for 400 BC. I think currently things are a little too complicated for, such a, just simplistic dialectic concept to be able, have a whole lot of traction. But I mean, on the other hand, it was just last week, I think, that Putin kind of went back to these ideas when he was talking about how, the West is changing their tune. I don't know if you caught his speech, but he was basically saying that sort of the multipolar world is winning. That our GDP is going to grow 3% this year. The European economies are shrinking. Medvedev, referred to Europe as arthritic, which is kind of in this idea of like great powers emerging, and therefore the old powers have to
This is
fight.
funny. That's a nice, interesting way to the phrase, because remember, for the longest time, the Ottoman Empire was called the sick man of Europe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so these, but these things I think are mostly just kind of ways to describe the current situation in the media in a way that keeps the population confused. I think that in back of these actions, there's secret societies and secret agendas that are really the power. I don't think the Hamas decided that it had a reasonable chance to cut across Israel and unified with the West Bank. I think that the idea that Israel was actually attacked or is at war is just a ludicrous concept that is being given to bamboozle people and justify genocide. And I think that in general, the struggle between sort of the West, the Atlantean powers, and the emergence of the BRICS, is that this makes sense, to describe it as a dialectic. But I just think that to really understand it in that broad stroke, you have to also know all of the little details that are occurring underneath it. It just isn't as simple as the 4th century BC. This is these are secret societies in operation. And also there's just because the media exists, you have propaganda. The thing that is always the most powerful part of all of this is the propaganda, right? And so I think that you had a legitimate situation, with Athens and Sparta, of how, one existing power would be threatened by the emergence of another one. But here, what you really have is propaganda of that dialectic being given to people to justify, just basically depopulation. I think the big force that's going on now is not really sort of East versus West, but it's oligarch versus the citizens, and that conflict is hidden by the propaganda, and that process has as its goal, not kind of the economic conquest or military, even military conquest, but rather just depopulation. I mean, in that kind of construction, you can see how the vaccines make sense, the lockdown makes sense, World War I makes sense. I mean, we're in the process of being depopulated. And we can't identify the group that's doing it because they've been very clever with the propaganda. So when you look at, explanations for the current moment, going back to the 4th century, they are logical. They have some, coherency. But no, I don't think it's the actual problem that people need to be focused on.
Well, I do think with respect to China and Russia, you have a and the West versus the West, if you will. One thing that is Russia or sorry China's development in the past since 1979, who paid for that? Where'd the money come from, the industrialized China? Has that ever been explained? It might have something to do with the trillions that have been siphoned out of the United States. The black budget and the missing trillions at the Pentagon. There's some question, where did that money go? And there's interesting discussion I saw. This was made in the 90s, early 90s or late 80s. Mel Gibson, of all people, was talking about how Australia, the Australian Central Bank, was loaning money to China at discounted rates to develop so they could develop factories to undermine labor in Australia. So this
Yeah.
sort of this cosmopolitan oligarchic plan to use the resources of the West to develop non-Western countries to exploit the cheap labor there, then ship the jobs over there, and sort of this idea that you could leverage humanity against each other as an oligarchic plan, meaning they had no loyalty or regard for their native country. They don't see themselves as belonging to a native country. They're cosmopolitan. And of course, these people are overwhelmingly Jewish, so it's Jewish finance, if you will. And if you're not Jewish, it's Jewish influenced finance, meaning the attitude is very Jewish. The Jewish spirit is there with usury and compound interest and the inexorable force of compound interest and what they can do to an economy. Leveraging debt, load it down in debt, and then sort of leverage the debt to buy sell it off. That's what they've done in the West and then after the 1980s. And of course, you destroy communities this way. You destroy, again, it speaks to what is economics to begin with, anyway. So is it just physics? Well, economics used to be a subset of morality, a moral philosophy. But it's been sort of since the Enlightenment, particularly since the British, since the English Reformation, ideas were developed, certain cosmology, outlook were developed to justify the plundering of the Reformation. And to develop exploitative capitalism, which then produces socialism, but then and then produces libertarianism, but then these things, there's a dialectic here, each reacting to the previous injustice. But the problem is, that's never the real issue is never really addressed. But as for I do think that with China and Russia, you have a civilizational opposition to the sort of the deracinated cosmopolitan West, which is now taken over by oligarch. Jewish oligarchs. And so you do, although however imperfect, obviously the Communist Chinese Party is, how imperfect Putin is and his government is, it does roughly represent that civilization. And that's why I think the Jewish dominated West is at war with them. There was a time, I think, when the oligarchs were setting China up for a plan, but like a lot of things, you do that, then you lose control of the situation. And then it becomes a problem. The same way the Japanese became a problem for the West in the early 20th century when it was developed with Western credit along Western lines and these things, then Japanese became too big for their britches. They had to be reduced, and that's why you had the war in the Pacific. So again, this broad again the sort of this meta analysis. Again, it's not so much incorrect as insufficient, and avoid some other things. Good example: one of the key things that occurred in the West. Particularly the United States, particularly the United States, I think this kind of occurred in the longer period in Great Britain in the 19th and early 20th century, was a Jewish takeover of the British Empire, primarily through the Rothschilds and through finance and banking. Of course, this was facilitated by the French Revolution and the Napoleonic period when he had Jewish emancipation, when he had all the restrictions that were imposed upon Jews to protect what would then identify itself as Christian civilization. From the Jewish predation and corruption, and it was recognized as such at that time. These things still exist, but under liberalism, we're not allowed to identify these things because it offends our liberal sensibilities, which is based on a fantasy of universal human equality. It just simply doesn't exist. So you had the Rothschilds take over the British Empire, and that's when you have Zionism really take off. And so you have the and that a lot of it usually plays a big part in that because the aristocracy, which has stolen all the land. From the Catholic Church during the Reformation, were hungry for cash because they wanted to build landed estates and these things. So they borrowed a lot of money. So this is a function of the money economy, and they went into hock. And it was that point that the Jews in Great Britain were able to sort of finagle themselves or inveigle themselves into the British establishment. Also, taking over the Bank of England didn't hurt. And so a lot of what we call, the geopolitical interest of Great Britain is really Rothschild interests. And that's what you see with Palestine and Zionism. In the United States, you had the WASP elite. I made a point the other day to someone we were talking, I was talking about Jewish power. He was saying it's anti-Semitic, it's conspiracy theory. And I said, first of all, is it really too outlandish to think that an ethnic group with an inordinate financial, cultural, economic power is going to leverage that power and to pursue its own interests? Is that really hard to concept to grasp? Okay, then I said, well, it's kind of funny because the Jews and other people have no problem identifying something called the WASP elite and criticizing the WASP elite and acknowledging at one time the WASP elite controlled the country. Well, the problem is the Jews use that critique to again gain power to sort of nudge the WASP elite out, and now once the ascendant Jews are in power, we're not allowed to criticize the Jewish elite. but the elite exists, and elites always exist. My contention is the Jewish elite are far more, problematic than the WASP elite. Although I'm no friend of the WASP elite at the time, I'm a Catholic. There's much criticism for the WASP elite, but there was a gradual or silent coup in the United States where the Jews supplanted the WASP elite. Probably, I mean, obviously, they're very. You could see it in the First World War, or the Second World War. Really, the Second World War was the watershed event, and between 1946 and 1978, they took over from the WASPs. And now there's very little institutional resistance to the Jewish agenda in the United States. We see that now with the takeover of U.S. foreign policy and the State Department. And you look at all the wars in the Ukraine, our policy towards Israel, the fact that Congress is bought and paid for by AIPAC, and there's simply no institutional resistance to the organized Jewish community in the United States. So we have since have a position of philo-Semitism in the West, because we're not allowed to criticize Jewish power, which is immense. So you have de facto philo-Semitism in the West. That's the dynamic now. If you look at if you look at this Thucydides trap, okay, yeah, it's generally correct, I suppose, but it ignores these things like the Jewish coup in the West, particularly how the Jewish takeover of the United States in the latter half of the 20th century, which we're seeing now played out because they dominate all foreign policy. And we see that with the debates on Congress, or lack of debate on Congress. We see that when the U.S. government announces a whole government approach to combat anti-Semitism, when Congress passes a resolution declaring anti-Semitism to be a national security threat. I didn't know we were a Jewish state. It's a national security threat. But if there was a problem with anti-Semitism, there would have been institutional resistance to the White House's call for a national strategy to combat anti-Semitism, because then anti-Semitism would exist. The fact there was no institutional response to that claim or that policy initiative by the United States proves that there is no problem with anti-Semitism in the United States. If anything, the problem is philo-Semitism. There's no resistance to it. So that's that's an important dynamic, is that you've had sort of a Jewish coup, if you will, in the United States in the past 56 years, because since the roughly since the 6-7 war, with the waning of the WASP elite and the Jews filling the gap and sort of the culture ascendancy that occurred. And we can discuss why that occurred. I mean, I can discuss it today, it's not enough time, but why that occurred is a lot of things. It's the development of suburbia, technology, Hollywood, the collapse of the production code, psychological warfare, the destruction of Catholic identity. All this plays into that. And that void was filled by Jewish power. And now in the United States, just by default, most people have become spiritual Jews in their outlook on things. And we see that today with finance and our culture and entertainment and these things, the corruption of sexual morals, which enhances Jewish power. And again, if you point all this out, you're just accused of being an anti-Semite, despite the fact that you can painstakingly go through and draw the connections, cite the books that Jews write, and the various events, the litigation, the activism, the feminism and abortion, these things, all these affecting society, leading to society, sort of the degeneracy and meltdown of American society, and its erasure, as we see now. It was kind of funny because. Ironic, because at the same time the Israelis rely on American muscle to defend its power, Jewish activism in the United States has destroyed America. You can't have, for example, the country's being overwhelmed with third world immigration, illegal, facilitated by Jews. You have the psychological warfare and the culture war being waged by Jews in Hollywood and advertising, the critical race theory promoted, the diversity, equity, inclusion. So they're supplanting the heritage, American society, white majority, with third world brown people. The cultural war, the degeneracy, they're hollering out the country. They've installed a venal, corrupt, and stupid political class, which simply can't manage the empire anymore. So they're creating a situation where they're relying on American power to prop them up, but they're creating a situation where the American empire simply won't have the power to, won't have the capacity to project power to protect their interest anymore. And I don't think if the Jews are thinking of moving on to China or somewhere else, that these countries are gonna be quite as receptive. Because you can't guilt Chinamen with anything. You can't tell them about the Holocaust and feel bad about it. They're going to say, so what? We're not going to do it. So again, this might be an example of chutzpah, them simply going too far, and they're destroying themselves, which historically they've done. That was a rant. I'm sorry.
No, it was interesting. I would say that, the idea that you had the Rothschilds take over Britain financially is actually incorrect. What happened was you had a secret society take over British political and economic power, the Masons, Freemasons, and they then brought the Rothschilds into the position of prominence, and people became aware of them. I mean, the fact is, like if you look at the Balfour Declaration, how it gets established, you can see that the Masons were working on that thing for, 80 years, and that the families that are doing it are all Grandmaster Freemasons. So you have this takeover of British life and political power that has occurred, that a manifestation of is the Balfour Declaration. But it is bringing, the Balfour Declaration to the Rothschild. It isn't Rothschild power, forcing them to, at least not that we can see and know about. So really, when I think of like Jewish cultural power in the West, I think you have to first step back a second and see, how that actually is being implemented. And I think what you find, just like the Balfour Declaration is a really good example, easy to follow. You're really just seeing the Masons, who I think are at the high level converso, or at least have some.
Then you're back to the Jews.
Well, of course. And the thing is, this is why I keep saying, you got to have to know what kind of world we live in.
Isn't masonry? I mean, isn't skeptic? What do they call it? Masonry full of like rituals from the Old Testament and all that stuff.
It's just a version of the most fundamental Hebrew religion, as far as I can tell. But so that's what really has to be exposed, I think, first of all, is that, the idea that you have like the Rothschilds, kind of because of they have the money, they're manipulating. I mean, this is preposterous. It's the other way around. It's the Masons who are manipulating the Rothschilds. And this, you can really see this in like, for example, in Palestine, where what you had, like with, McMahon and his correspondence with Hussein, you have the head Freemason of the region lying to the Arabs and deliberately setting up a situation where the Balfour Declaration would be able to be implemented, right? And so it's this coordination that people miss, which I always try to point out, because I think that gives them an understanding of the world that is clear, and you can resist because you have the clarity, you understand what's going on, because they fool us so often by simply switching names. It isn't the Masons, it's Bohemian Grove, it's Skull and Bones, it's the Club of Rome. It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. B'nai B'rith, it's all the same thing. They just use different names as part of the process of bamboozling. And so I mean, the idea that it is the Rothschilds are Jewish power that is somehow amazingly manipulating Europe. No, I don't see this. What I see is a secret society that overtook the political power in Europe. What's called Palmerston Zoo. The reason Palmerston said in 1840, now is the time for the Jews to return to the Holy Land, what he was really saying is the Freemasons have taken over the political power of Europe. That's really what that statement means. It goes, this is why the Jews can go back, is because we've got Masons in power throughout the entire European continent. Therefore, we can just do anything we want. And what we want is to basically set up the way it was before, you know, the first century war against Rome. This is kind of what is actually happening. So to understand the world, in my opinion, you know, you got to start with identifying the secret society that took over Europe in the early part of the 19th century. That's the first step. And then, you know, the onset of Jewish power, the attack against the heritage Europeans for to debase them and eventually depopulate them. Everything makes sense, you know, from that perspective. I think a lot of times just the dialectic of Christian and Jews doesn't really, you know, because it misses out on the Masonic influence, it doesn't give a really good explanation of things. I also think that, you know, E. Michael Jones talks about the WASP power, and he sees this triangle between the Jews, the WASP, and, you know, and Catholics. I just think this is incorrect. I think you've got to understand that the WASP, what they're called, the WASP, are so often Masons, which means that, you know, if you don't have DNA testing on these guys, you sure don't have an understanding of what really is in back of them, like, you know, like the Rockefellers. And of course, even with Zionist Catholics like William F. Buckley, I mean, what the heck is Buckley? You know, how Skull and Bones member, an absolute fanatical Zionist, you know, he is taking all of this Jewish money when he, you know, to create his magazine when he doesn't need any of it. His father, one of the wealthiest people in the United States, he's just much more easy to understand as a lifetime actor. And that's the key concept in my mind. You know, you understand Palmerston, you know, Ludendorff, all of these political, you know, Europeans supposedly that are leading to the destruction of the population. If you understand them as lifetime actors, as people who are really representing a Judeo-Masonic vision of the world and are trying to bring it about using secrecy, I think you get a much clearer understanding of the world. That's my opinion.
Well, I think, again, I think what happened, there's been a circulation of elites. And all that may be true, but at a certain time, the junior partner became the major partner in this, and through various intrigues and as events unfolded in the West, and all that with Masonry. Remember, Masonry was, you know, you had the Scottish Rite Freemasonry and the Lodge that was created in England in the early 18th century, that was created, I guess, with the advent of the Whig ascendancy, and also the sort of the final resolution of the British Reformation. And it was used as a technology for British imperialism, as a method for infiltration and control, and also to engage in high level, I guess, criminality, if you will, without getting caught, to infiltrate. So you had Scottish Rite Freemasonry, and then you had Continental Masonry. And all this is just secret societies operating. But I do think what's happened in the West was since the 19th century, with the with Jewish emancipation, was the again, this Freemasonry actually calls for this. So you can see a lot of similarities between what Freemasonry calls for and its consistency, or at least it's how it furthers Jewish interests, because it preaches things like religious tolerance and religious indifference, and these things. These have all been implemented in the West. Now, like I said, since the 19th century, the revolutionary Freemasonic principles have become ascendant. So they're the norm. And so now that's just the way people look at things. Most people see things through the lens of a Freemasonic vision. Politically. Yeah, so, right. I think what happens is there is a revolution. There are events that occurred where they've basically they've been outsmarted or infiltrated. And there's one thing is that there is a tendency when Jews are allowed into an organization, they take it over, use it for their interest. You don't see that with other groups as much. And so there's a different dynamic there. I do think suggests that what we could do is see what happens if you did go back to some sort of situation where this group was excluded from high power, from culture, economic, and political power, being able to control, and you had a society that was I guess had a better, stronger sense of identity, religious identity, had protections against the sort of subversion. What would happen? Because it was in the advent of the Enlightenment when these protections were removed, that you had the takeover occur. And so, not to be overly simplistic, but at some point, just, let's see what happens. Let's see what would happen if you remove them, if you would get a more peaceful, just world.
Couldn't agree more, but we have to remember one thing. When you have to make sure that you're really implementing actual ethnic Europeans in a position of power. Like I would bet that if you look at Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, that you're dealing with people who have a tradition of converso, right? This is what I'm afraid of, is that these people are so irrational. Now, in some instance, that I'm sure you've got actual ethnic Europeans that are just mind controlled to the nth degree.
Well, there's degenerate and blackmail that they just do the bidding. There's
And
shovels.
there's also the ways where you can be controlled. But if in fact these
How
are
much
just
money is Mitch McConnell worth?
too much.
And how to
But
get that?
yeah, of course. But
Yeah.
the point is that if you don't weed out the converso element of it, then you're unfortunately just going to be going back to the same system, even if you get rid of what are purportedly Jews, right? You're just going to end up with
Well, you
more.
can't have people, government ministers, who supposedly represent the public, just belong in these secret societies, whether they're Jewish or not.
Exactly. And also you can't have lifetime actors. Look, if Mitch McConnell is really just a mind controlled robot, of like Judaic interests, then that's one situation that can be dealt with. But if he's really a lifetime actor, if he really is just lying about who he is in order to get elected so he can control people, it's a different problem. And so what I would say is, look, if any of these like rhinos or even like a left wing, people like Clinton and things like this, they should be just give them a DNA test and see who they're related to. That's the first step.
Well,
Is
Clinton, people like Clinton are easy to corrupt. They live by their stomach, so they're easy to corrupt.
sure. But remember, he's also, a demolé high
Well,
level.
yeah.
He wasn't just a demolé. He was like the leading demolé young man in the United States. You got pictures of him meeting Kennedy when he was like, 12 years old and stuff. He was being set up even back then. So there is this grooming
Well,
of a class, that goes on that you got to be aware of and then try to.
here's my position. Is I'm not saying that excluding these people from power would create a perfect society. You're going to have problems anyway. It would create a better society. It would be an improvement. Obviously, you're going to have problems. But when you talk about something like, again, it goes against our liberal sensibilities. In fact, we're called Nazis, or we're called, what are you? If you think certain groups are based on their ethnic identity or what group they identify, should be excluded, shouldn't be trusted as much. It's not a basis for suspicion. Well, you're denying the history of that group then. Okay? Living in a fantasy. For an idea, you're living in a fantasy. I'm dealing in reality here. You do research, you read their own history. They're things they own, right? They're talking about Jews, what they write about themselves. Every major Jewish political figure in the United States acted as a secret Zionist agent. Everyone. Brandeis, Frankfurter, Bernard Baruch, Morgenthau, Harry Dexter White, everyone, whether they're praised, in the historical textbooks, the standard narrative of trailblazing Jewish legal theorists, judges. Then you read them like Louis Brandeis, belonging to the Perushim, who's using his position as a Supreme Court justice to advance the Zionist cause when it's hurting the interest of the United States. It's getting the American people into wars. It's starting wars, and he's using that very privileged position that's entrusted to him in violation of the very oath he took. He has a secret oath with a secret Jewish secret society, but then he takes an oath to be a Supreme Court justice because he's Jewish. Well, there you go. Then we're told therefore suspicious of Jews, we're just we're just retrograde anti-Semites and irrational, and we hate people. But look, read through his history. What he belonged to, he involved inveigled involved the United States in the Zionist intrigue in the Middle East because he was Jewish. Same with Rabbi Stephen Wise. He even said it himself. He said, "Asked him if you're an American or Jewish." He says, "Well, I've been American for 200 years. I've been a Jew for 3,000 years." That was his identity. And so that there, this is a problem. It's just a specific problem. No other group, Germans, Italians, Irish come here, then a generation, they don't identify as German or Irish anymore. In fact, you can get them to go back over to Italy and Germany and kill their cousins, firebomb them. Jews are, so again, every little figure, Bernard Baruch, all these people that are involved in the New Deal and the Roosevelt administration, the Wilson administration, they're all intriguing to pursue narrow Jewish interest. And then
And
if they're powerful, businessmen, or they're gangsters, or they're Hollywood moguls, they're spies for Israel, if they entrust them, if you give them nuclear secrets, they'll give them to the Israelis. Even the ones that went after the communists turned around and gave nuclear secrets to the Israelis, so the Israelis have their nuclear program because Zionism mattered more. That's the reality of the situation. I know ideally we're not supposed to think this way because we're supposed to be Americans, and we're just to believe if you just embrace the American creed, your religious ethnicity, race does not matter. But it does matter. It does matter, and then you got to deal with that reality. And we got to. If you're not dealing with reality, you're delusional and you're insane, and you don't get anywhere.
It's interesting because you mentioned like Wise and Morgenthau. I remember that they were the ones who brought the information supposedly to the United States concerning like the extermination of Jews by
Yes,
the
consider so when you get that news,
and
consider the
remember who was
source.
the Gentiles were saying, man, this doesn't make any sense. And they were and then bear in mind that they were talking about camps at that time, which were in Germany, which have been proven after the fact to not have been extermination areas that did not have any kind of, gas chambers, et cetera, et cetera. So you had, and then the claim was that the Germans were making the Jews into soap and lubricants, right? So these are absurd claims that were then the beginning of the Holocaust narrative, right? And yet the if you look at just from your perspective, you can see that right there, right at the very beginning in 1938, you're getting the Gentiles had a position of, well, this doesn't make any sense. But the Jews who are bringing the information were operating in kind of a racial, perspective, which ends up with where now in Western world you have the self-correcting idea of Holocaust denial. Being something that impedes Gentiles from thinking about the reality of World War II, and getting back to our present moment when the Israeli politician talks about Dresden, that you can't have an immediate reaction to this individual as this is racial genocide. This is evil. We have to, we have to expose this. We can't be allied with it in any way. So it's all kind of one system, isn't it, Tim?
And it's like if you're protesting Israelis saturation bombing Gaza and killing babies, well, because you should criticize Israelis, you're an anti-Semite. That's not allowed. And in college, in a college campus, will expel you, or you'll be blacklisted, and no one will hire you. That they're actually literally saying that. Jewish billionaires are saying that, threatening that.
Yeah, they're withdrawing funds from universities where the anti-Semitism that they're talking about is protesting, Israeli,
Bombing
bombing
civilians.
of civilians. And so, it's mind control. It is something they can even bring to the public because it's been in the success of a long-standing program. But man, it's hanging by a thread, in my opinion. There's just too much internet kind of independent thinking that's going on. You wonder, could they have done World War II if the internet had been up and going and people were exchanging information? There's a battle being waged now, really, between kind of the clarity of mind of the Western world versus the Judeo-Masonic propaganda.
No, yeah.
It's never been the world war. That's the real world war. And I'm telling you, Tim, it's never been more intense than it is right now.
That's true. Okay, Joe.
Tim, thank you so much, brother. We'll talk next week.
Enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.